Marketing Companion. Here are your hosts, Mark Schaefer and Tom Webster, sponsored by Voices Heard Media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. Welcome, one and all, to another edition of The Marketing Companion. This is Mark Schaefer with my scintillating and phantasmagorical co-host, Tom Webster.
Does that mean I'm sparkling but not even here somehow? I'm not sure what that means.
You're emitting light in a virtual kind of way.
Fascinating. Well, I'll take that. I like that. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for the phantasmagorical.
You are a one-man light show, Tom.
I haven't been called phantasmagorical since my goth years back in 2006.
Well, that sounds like a great podcast topic. So what have you been up to since over the last couple of weeks?
I have been up to this awful process, a horrible process called author review.
Oh.
So as I probably mentioned on the podcast, I've been writing a book with Tim Hayden on mobile. And the book is written, but we're now in this phase where the editors send back all of our chapters with, you know, edits in track changes by four different people. And we have like a week to answer everything. And it's kind of making me crazy. It's kind of making me question if I'll ever write another book.
It's again. Glamorous, isn't it?
It doesn't seem to affect you at all, but
writing a book is the hardest thing I do. It really is. I mean, that actually probably would be a good topic for another podcast to talk about our processes and talk about the ups and downs. But, we've got a great topic today. I'm really excited about, and it kind of celebrates that my new book is out. And it really is a new book, even though it's a second edition of the Dial of Twitter, or the Tal of Twitter, as they say in many places, or even in some interviews, the Tao of Twitter.
The Tao. I like the Dole of Twitter.
The Dole. That's the Simpson version of my book.
The Dole.
Soon to be released.
You must be cooking up some other book titles, Mark.
I have. Well, you know, I have been thinking of a new book, The 50 Shades of Schaefer.
And is that going to be exactly what it sounds like, or
it's going to be a tell-all. It's going to be a tell-all, like, and I'm estimating it'll be about 3 pages. Oh. It would encapsulate about, you know, 1 year of college.
50 Shades of Schaefer.
50 Shades of Schaefer, yes. How about you? So what are you thinking? Any other book ideas for you after the mobile thing, or are you going to be done?
No, I got a few. I mean, well, first of all, I think listeners to this podcast have been fascinated by the ongoing development and story of Google Pants, right? I mean, so the Google Pants development story and how we got funding and our technological issues and all that. So I think the next thing I'm going to write is going to be kind of a behind the scenes tell all of that process called Wuthering Tights.
Oh, no. Or withering.
Withering tights.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've kind of got this role going about, I've written about blogging and Twitter and influence. So, I'm thinking I might turn to Google and Google Plus. I was thinking of a book title, something like, Harry Potter and the Desolate Hangout.
You might have licensing issues with that. I'm not sure. I'm not a lawyer.
That's never stopped me before. I
think
laws are overrated in general, Tom.
Yeah, they really are. We should move where
this
they are.
Information is meant to be set free. So let's just do that.
I agree. I have a book in mind, which is a romance, by the way, because I don't really want to write business books for the rest of my life.
That makes so much sense. I mean,
doesn't it? I'm the most romantic guy, you know.
You're synonymous with romance, basically.
I'm synonymous with romance. So yeah. Right now I've got a book on the drafting table, tentatively titled The Fault in Our Avatars, which I see as kind of a doomed romance between social media consultants, one of whom has lost a leg to Twitter.
Oh my. Oh, well, there's that opens up lots of possibilities. Any idea of who would star in this book? Is it loosely based on real people?
Yeah, it's absolutely. You know that person who lost their leg to Twitter. So yeah, it's based on them. And I'm thinking about getting Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan to star in it. Because I had them originally down for my Facebook romance when Harry liked Sally. Which did not sell at all. So kind of turned me off to the genre.
Any others?
I think we better push on.
Okay.
How about you? You got any others?
I just didn't want to leave any stone unturned there, Tom, because you were clearly you're on a roll.
Yeah, I just petered out.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, believe it or not, we actually have a topic today, and I think I've got the new edition of the book out, and it's not really a revision, as it turned out, Tom. It ended up being a rewrite. I mean, about 75% of the book is new. Mm-hmm. I mean, so much has changed in the last 2 years, and I really kind of had to reflect. What does Twitter stand for these days? And I think, my view is this is the time for Twitter. And I think we had the earnings announcement last week. And there's a lot of momentum there. Their revenue jumped 124% in one quarter. They're the active users, and they have a decent definition, a rational definition of active users compared to other platforms that are out there. Again, kind of beat the street on the active users, which is an important thing that people are looking at. But here's something interesting, and I think this reflects the chaos when it comes to thinking about Twitter. After the earnings announcement, Bank of America improved their recommendation from a neutral to a buy. UBS's recommendation on Twitter is neutral, and Pivotal Research came out with a recommendation of sell.
Well, I think this only backs up my financial philosophy, which is index funds. Nobody beats the market over time. Thank you.
I'm gonna make that into a T-shirt.
It should be a T-shirt. All you young investors out there.
Yeah, Webster wear.
Well, I've been thinking a lot about Twitter because Twitter went through a bit of a lull in terms of the Cognoscenti and the Digerati's love with it. Mm. And I was trying to figure out why that is. And I have a theory about that, which I'll get to. But I think, certainly Twitter shined during the World Cup.
Well, certainly that's got to be driving this quarterly growth.
Yeah, Twitter absolutely shined during the World Cup. And it made me think about something, which is something that I've long said about podcasts, actually. But it appears to be very true about Twitter as well. Now, podcasts and Twitter both reach a minority percentage of the population, mm-hmm. right? They're not, neither one of them are majority activities. However, they both reach a very select slice of Americana, right? They tend mm-hmm. to be more educated. Mm-hmm. They tend to have more disposable income. They tend to spend that disposable income. And what I know is true of podcasts from research. They are increasingly not receptive to traditional interrupt advertising. Mm-hmm. The people who listen to podcasts.
Absolutely.
Now let's flash forward to Twitter.
Well, I wish I had an ad to stick in here right now. That would have been
too.
The perfect moment.
You need a car. Sunday at the Rochester War Memorial.
We're going crazy.
but I suspect it's true of Twitter as well. And if you think about the World Cup, right, and any big live sporting event. Big live sporting events like that are magnets for advertising dollars. You have all of these advertisers spending a fortune to get 30 seconds during the World Cup, 30 seconds during the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But what is happening to a wealthy and attractive 20% of your audience during the commercials?
Oh, I thought you were going to mention me at that point when you said wealthy and attractive.
What is happening to you, Mark? That wealthy and attractive 20% of people that are watching the show are maybe looking away from the commercial you spent millions of dollars for and looking at the second screen. And that is not insignificant, right? And that all of a sudden makes, you know, buying promoted tweets on Twitter during things like the World Cup not a stupid proposition when you compare it to the cost of buying a TV spot.
Well, you know, you bring up several amazing points here. And let me just, first of all, let me challenge you on one of the points you made. And that is that Twitter has a minority audience or a very niche audience. And I think you'll agree with me. In fact, I know you will, because I think you've got research to back it up, that although, you know, what's the number? 15% of U.S. adults are on Twitter, something like that.
It's 16 this
16%,
year.
16%, yeah. All yeah. right. I think the number, Tom, is something like over 80% see tweets.
Yes, and that is also from our research.
Yeah.
They either see or hear about tweets on some other media network.
Yeah.
So,
and
yes,
and
this is a different and very good point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the other thing that Twitter is trying to figure out, what they're seeing is there's triple the number of people who look at Twitter and look at the Twitter stream without logging in. All right.
Yeah.
So they're in fact an active consumer, but they're not an active user. This is not being captured in the Twitter numbers. So, and they're trying to figure this out. They're trying to say, how do we capture this? How do we represent this? How do we position this to advertisers? Because, mm-hmm. you know, this is, there's almost like this ghost audience of Twitter that's seeing tweets on TV, every live event from, you know, American Idol to the Oscars to the Super Bowl is reporting on tweets, either celebrity tweets or audience tweets. And then there's this ghost audience where triple the number of active users are going onto Twitter without logging in to look for tweets or just to kind of look at the news feed. Mm-hmm. So that's one point I wanted to make on your very rich comments there. The other thing is your point about the World Cup. Didn't Twitter do an amazing job? They basically created a whole new channel just for the World Cup. And I think that acknowledges their special place as the de facto second screen. We hear this term, second screen. And you know what that means is that people are engaging in social media while they're watching TV or even a movie or the news. And the World Cup on Twitter just blew up, as every live event does. And so from your position, Tom, as a media researcher, I mean, how does that create value for Twitter? How is that going to create value for advertisers? And you know, how do you capture that?
Well, I think this is why the future is actually quite bright for Twitter. And I think, you know, the thing about the second screen argument, I there's no such thing as the second screen. There's the screen you're looking at.
Right.
And
yeah.
The screen, when the game is on, you're looking at one screen. When the game is not on, you're looking at another screen. You don't have divided attention. You have full attention on the screen you were looking at. And if during the commercial breaks during the World Cup, your full attention, if you are a Twitter user and a, you know, quote, second screen, unquote, user, I don't like that. Your full attention is on Twitter. And your full attention is on talking about the game. Your full attention is, seeing, you know, reading funny things or seeing highlights of the game, and at least partial attention on messages that are coming from advertisers and sponsors. And I think the future is very bright for Twitter because the only thing that Twitter lacks, which it will have, is that buy now button. And when you can start conducting commerce on Twitter in the moment, you're going to see Twitter become a very, very powerful platform indeed.
Mm. Well, let me bring up another interesting thing about the monetization in Twitter, and also kind of give a tip here for our listeners. Twitter advertising is really cheap right now.
Yep.
And the reason it's so cheap is because they have a huge capacity for ads that isn't full right now. And so what's going to happen is there's going to be a finite amount of ads, theoretically anyway. And once you hit that level, then the prices are going to start going up. And this is one of the points that was made in an analysis in the Wall Street Journal to say, this is a great time to do Twitter advertising because Twitter can deliver to you amazingly detailed demographics. And I've done some experiments with Twitter advertising, and it's amazing how many conversations are going on out there about just about anything. And you can find people who are interested in what you do, interested in your industry or your product or your service, and then have a promoted tweet show up in their timeline. And here's the other thing, Tom, and a lot of people don't know this. You only pay for an ad on Twitter if somebody interacts with the tweet. So if Twitter provides a target user for you, and they favorite it, or they click on the link, or they retweet it, then you pay whatever the small amount is. Now, if the user retweets it and other people interact with it, that's free.
Mm.
You don't pay for that.
Yeah.
So there's multiplier effect on Twitter that a lot of people don't recognize the real value here. So if you've never tried Twitter advertising, this is the perfect time to do it because it's so darn cheap right now.
Well, talk about cheap. One of the really powerful things that is also
again,
free,
I thought you'd put my name in there.
One of the really powerful things about Mark Schaefer.
No, cheap. When you started out cheap.
I did. I started out cheap. At first you went from attractive and wealthy to cheap, and I don't know.
It's not mutually exclusive.
I guess, no, you're wrong about that. One of the things that's actually free, within Twitter, in promoted tweets, if you have a Twitter ad account, you can set up a promoted tweet, and you can also, in Twitter ads, you can create what's called a lead generation card, which is something you can append to a promoted tweet that with one click will allow you to capture the contact information of someone who's interested in your offer. Well, guess what? You can build that in ads and append it to a regular tweet for free. So that's actually another great free thing about Twitter. I mean, Twitter is actually giving away a lot of wonderful tools to build your email list or reach a targeted audience, right? And it's free. And as you say, there's still tons of inventory, and there's a lot of opportunity, just as there is in Facebook, to create better targeted messages, right? I mean, a lot of the crap you see on Facebook is just simply lazy targeting by advertisers, but the opportunities are there, and the opportunities are certainly there on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, I think it kind of gets down to that a lot of businesses really don't understand. They keep comparing Twitter to Facebook or LinkedIn. They keep lumping it together. But I think that's part of the value here, is that Twitter really is it's unique. It has a unique audience. It delivers messages in a unique way. It has unique capabilities to deliver some demographic audiences to you in real time, capturing conversations and customer needs and sentiments in the moment. So if businesses spend a little time understanding these opportunities, and I think that's the challenge for Twitter. It's always been the challenge for Twitter, is that it's not intuitive. Facebook is intuitive. YouTube, you click a button, you watch a video. It's intuitive. A lot of people, there's this digital divide between a lot of consumers and Twitter, because they go on here and they see hashtags and at mentions and Twitter chats, and it's confusing, and it could be a little daunting. And I mean, that's the one part of my book that actually remains the same from one edition to the next, where I start out kind of telling a very human story about how I figured out, how I kind of detected the human pulse of Twitter amid all this confusion. So, I'm hoping that Twitter can make some progress and connect with people and businesses and cut through some of this intimidation.
Well, we jumped on, and I use the royal we here, technology companies jumped on the power of algorithms really, really early, which is another book I'm working on, Flowers for Algorithm. But there's a lot of reliance and trust that algorithms can deliver to us the content that we want, right? Well, I think there are plenty of signs that that a lot of the algorithms that we rely upon are creaky and flawed, right? I mean, Facebook's algorithm for the news feed constantly being tweaked, constantly ticking people off. You saw Google recently buy Songza, and Songza is a service that provides human curated playlists.
I missed that.
Yeah. Google bought Songza, and that's about human curation. And I think the missing link here for Twitter is they need to have a division set up, a little pirate division of humans inside Twitter to create well human curated lists by interest and by topic that are high on signal, low on noise. Machines can't do it yet.
This is so amazing. Literally, 5 minutes before we got onto this podcast, I was looking over Facebook, and I've got a friend over in Singapore, Crystal Keck. It's Q-U-E-K. And Crystal is an amazing, she is one of the brightest young women I have met in a long time. And she just joined Twitter about 6 months ago. And one of her projects, Tom, is she's curating the best tweets from business leaders and putting them into some kind of a book. Uh-huh. And I just saw that. So I don't know much about it. The first thing I did was, gee, Crystal, how do I get a hold of this thing? Because that would be fascinating to see. But I love that idea. I love that idea. I mean, curating wisdom, curating humor, curating insight. That would be really entertaining.
Well, I'll tell you what makes me think of that is one of my colleagues at Edison is our executive VP, Joe Linsky, and he is a real Twitter aficionado. He's our guru for all things election polling and exit polling, and he loves Twitter. He follows about 150 people. That's it. He has selected them very carefully. They are the best top names in polling, election research, and political work, and they follow him back. And that, just following Joe Linsky's Twitter follower list is gold if you are interested in politics, because Joe has done that work.
Wow.
Right? His list is gold.
Yeah.
And there, there needs to be more of that, and that would really unlock just exactly how powerful Twitter is.
Well, you're bringing up another amazing point that a lot of people overlook, and that is the power of Twitter for research. Some people I talk to, even at big brands, say Twitter, they rely on Twitter. It's the greatest source of marketing insight they've ever had, and it's free. And I'll give you one small example. I was doing a little. I offer small businesses and entrepreneurs these little 1 hour consulting sessions, and I really enjoy it because it keeps me in touch with stuff that's on people's minds out there. And I was working with this real estate agent, and he was struggling with how do I use social media, how do I differentiate myself. And I said, have you ever thought about using Twitter for research? He said, well, what do you mean? Well, he lives and works in Toronto. while we were on the phone, I just put in a simple little Twitter search for people mentioning moving to Toronto or looking for a house in Toronto. And I found 30 references that were less than 48 hours old.
Yeah.
He said, oh. I mean, whether you're an individual solopreneur, a small business, or big companies, there are so many amazing conversations out there. People expressing their needs, expressing their frustrations, you know, complaining, celebrating, and people aren't people are viewing Twitter more as a broadcast channel than a research channel. And the tools are there. It's so simple to do, and it's completely free. And I love some of the ideas you're talking about, even looking at people's Twitter lists as a research tool. I think that's a brilliant idea.
Well, there's, you know, in terms of using tweets for research and just listening, right? I mean, there's three levels of that that I think anybody can engage in. You know, level one is, I am someone who sells houses. Okay. As you just said, let's do some research. Who is expressing an intent to buy a house? Right. The expression of intent is a big thing for researchers. And that's a sales tool. Right. Mm-hmm. That's good for sales research. Oh, great. Here's a prospect list. Right. The other thing you can do is you can search for someone who is looking to buy the type of product you sell. And maybe somebody steps in and recommends your product. Mm. Well, that's a good time to step in and say, thank you for recommending us.
Sure.
Person who's looking for it, here's a discount. Person who recommended us, here's this wonderful gift. Thank you for being an advocate.
Yeah.
Right. And then the third level of that is people that are looking for certain types of products that perhaps you offer. What else are they looking for? What else do they do? What kind of people are they? What makes them tick? That's the kind of work I do, because that's like the third level of research you can do on social to figure out, all right, these people, I know they're looking to buy a Von Flaven duct, but that's not all that makes them tick. Let's figure out what else makes them tick so that we can create better content marketing, so that we can create more intuitive products, so that we can anticipate the future needs of people like that. Mm-hmm. And Twitter is a wonderful resource for those things.
That is such a strong and important point, Tom, because, you know, almost everybody out there is talking about the importance of helpfulness and being useful. I mean, our friend Jay Baer wrote that just wonderful book called Utility. And it's not, you know, if you really want to do it and not just pay lip service to it and not just broadcast on social media, you need to be tuned in and listening like this and looking for those opportunities, just like you said, to reward people, to acknowledge people. I mean, to many individuals, that's better than money.
Yeah.
Just to say, I hear you. I thank you. You're important to us. What a wonderful gesture. We'd like to do something nice in return. I mean, because at the end of the day, you know, the platforms are going to change. The techniques are going to change. But whatever you can do to build loyalty, that trumps everything. And just adding that human touch, as you say, can make a big difference.
Absolutely.
So wonderful opportunities for Twitter. I think we're pretty much aligned. We're both bullish on Twitter, right?
I am bullish on Twitter. Yeah. It's funny. I want to add one quick thing here. Mm-hmm. I stopped using Twitter for quite a while, and because I didn't think I was getting value out of it. I didn't feel like the conversations I used to have were there anymore. And what I thought was that Twitter had changed. Mm. That Twitter had become noisier and less valuable, but the insight I had was, I think Twitter is a lot like real life, right? When you first step into social circles, let's say you're in school, you have a very large social circle, and then as you get older, you don't maintain that social circle as much, right? You gravitate from a large active social circle into fewer and fewer friends that you spend more time with, right? And you're busy on other things. Mm. Because you're no longer working on maintaining that large active social circle. And I think that's what happened to Twitter for me. It wasn't that, you know, Twitter is constantly changing. It is not staying static. I stayed static. And I think when I got that insight and figured that out, you constantly have to sort of reinvent how you're using Twitter to continue to get value out of it.
Great point, and it's a great way to end our podcast here, Tom, because that's exactly the conclusion I came to. You know, as I was working on this new version of the book, I had to reflect, how has Twitter changed? Is there still that human pulse going through the platform? That's why I fell in love with it, because I made so many great friends and so many connections through Twitter. And you know, when I did some introspection, I did some reflection, and I found out, yes, that human pulse still is there. It's still the driver. And it's and we talked about all these business reasons to use it. It can also be a great deal of fun and a great way to meet people, share experiences like the World Cup, cheer together, cry together, you know, cheer for your favorites. I think there's a bright future if people can just figure it out. So anyway, everyone, thanks for listening to our podcast. And I'd also like to give a shout out to my friend Will Overstreet, who runs the company Voices Heard Media, who is the sponsor of our podcast. Will just had his second child, so congratulations to Will. He's very tired, but he can still take new business. And his company is doing very, very well. You ought to check them out. They just picked up a couple significant new clients in the media world, and it's a great way to look at their platforms for scaling the conversation, scaling social. So again, on behalf of Tom Webster, we appreciate every one of you. Thank you for spending time with us, and we will see you next time.